comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are and wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. It's the show where you matter. Now, tonight is K-Files night. That means that following the show tonight, immediately following the show, we will begin sending out the K-Files for this week. The K-Files, of course, is our free weekly newsletter. And when we say free, we really mean free. It's we don't speak in Washington, D.C. double speak here. We speak in plain English. And so if we say free, we mean free. No strings attached. So if you're not getting the K-Files, you need to get it. All you have to do is go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click the link that says K-Files. You can then subscribe, and you'll get an automated email after that, a confirmation email. With a link in it, you have to click to activate your subscription. So just do that, and you're good to go, and you'll get this week's K-Files if you do that before the show is over. Tomorrow is the first Saturday of October, and on the first Saturday of each month, I go to our members area chat room, and I spend a couple of hours in the chat room chatting with folks. I invite you to be present. And we always have a good time. Sometimes, you know, there are lots of people in the chat room, and so it's just really hard to keep up with what everybody's saying. But it kind of gets to be a free-for-all sometimes. But that's okay. It's fun. And I'll be there. Now, the time for that is showtime. So whatever time it is right now in your time zone, right where you are, whatever time it is, that's the time to go to the chat room, and that's in the members area. Now, if you're not a member yet, you can take care of that as well tonight. It is not expensive, and there's lots of stuff in the members area, a whole lot of stuff in the members area. 23 cents a day. Now, that comes out to $6.95 a month. And for that $6.95, you get to watch the show. You can watch the latest show. So if you missed the show we did last night, you for 24 hours, it's still up there and you can watch it. And then the next show goes up. Okay, so after the show tonight, tonight's show goes up. You can listen to the latest show. You have your own profile page, your own friends page, your own blog. You can publish articles there. We have forums. We have the chat room. We've got a library of free ebooks for you to download if you want them. We have the video galaxy so that you can go and watch videos that have something to do with this genre. So just a lot of stuff. And I know I'm leaving stuff out that I just can't remember it all. But that's because I'm an old guy and there's a lot of stuff in there. If you haven't joined, join tonight, all right? We'll be back to talk about paranormal investigation. Some people call it ghost hunting, right after this. Thank you. My guest this evening is Joey Ward. Now, he's been my guest before. Joey Ward is the founder and director of the West Georgia Paranormal Research Society. And he's got a bit of a different approach to paranormal investigation than a lot of folks have. And it's something, his approach to paranormal investigation is something that I found to be quite interesting. And I think, you know, when he talked with us before, that's that was your general impression as well. We're glad to have him back with us this evening. Joey, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
Joey, let me just start off by telling people that, because a lot of folks will be listening now that didn't hear when you were with us before. So let's start off by saying that your approach to paranormal investigation focuses more on the scientific aspects of it, as opposed to the, standard, gee whiz, good golly, Miss Molly approach that a lot of folks take. Now, I'm not critical of the other folks, other than to say, while what they do might be interesting, what does it achieve? I can't answer any questions for us, but you approach it more from a scientific point of view. So let me just lead off with this first question, and we'll see where this goes. Is it really possible to be scientific about the paranormal?
Well, that's a good question. I think, and let me say, like you said, that the people who are in the field, and there are many who are doing things, you know, the same way. You have to give those people kudos, because if it weren't for those people, you know, people like myself probably wouldn't have gotten involved in this field.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, in the last year or two, things have changed drastically. I know if you were to go back and listen to the show from, say, 3 years ago, the questions and the responses that I had, and my take on the paranormal in general would have been drastically different, and it would have been more along the lines of what the typical conventional paranormal investigator would say. But in doing research and just sitting back and pondering life's mysteries, I came upon just a kind of simple fact, and that is that for all the researchers, all the ghost hunters and the paranormal investigators, and there is a difference. For the thousands of EVPs and pictures and wonderful evidence that we've accumulated, we haven't furthered the field one inch from where it was 10 years ago. And whenever the field becomes stagnant, you have to start thinking outside the box. Science plays into this from two aspects. Obviously, science requires you to look at things logically, analytically, theoretically, rather than just basing it on a theory that's already kind of accepted by the general community as being the way things are. The downside from the science aspect is that there's even less equipment for us to work with to try to prove some type of scientific explanation for paranormal than there is for the conventional investigator who uses infrared cameras, audio recordings, things like that. The scientific side of it, there really is no equipment at this point that we can use to try to back up the evidence. Is strictly theoretical.
Okay. Is it really important to be scientific about the paranormal?
Well, I think it is, and there again, it's because of the simple fact that conventional theory and the things that we've been doing for years in the field of paranormal research hasn't furthered the field. And the problem is that in order for the field to take on some level of credibility, not just for the general public, but the public in general, we're going to have to get the scientific community on board with this. And for the most part, you know, they're not interested in it. They don't consider paranormal research a credible field of science. Most scientists, even if they do have some opinions on the side, they're loath to come out and speak about it for fear of being ostracized by the community or ruining their reputation. There are a few that are coming out in different areas, but obviously as scientists, they're looking at this from a scientific aspect, and that's where things like quantum science come into play. Obviously, quantum mechanics and quantum science wasn't created to explain paranormal activity. It was created to explain how conventional physics breaks down at the molecular level. Why does gravity and density and mass and centrifugal force, things like that, why do they not add up when you're talking about things at the molecular and subatomic level? For me, when I began to explore quantum science, a lot of pieces of the puzzle fell into place. And what it does is it allows for the possibility of paranormal activity, but rather than explaining it as a paranormal event such as a spiritual entity or a metaphysical manifestation, it is more of a dimensional convergence. And what it says is that we live in a multiverse, that there are multiple dimensions existing outside of our own, and that death and heaven or hell or whatever afterlife you believe in based on your religion is not literally up or down, but it is dimensional. It's an ascension of the spirit, the essence of the body, into another dimension where a corporeal body is not needed. And paranormal activity is more of a dimensional convergence when our dimension and one of these dimensions converges briefly, possibly due to environmental disturbances, geomagnetic ley lines, solar flares, things like that. And it's not a spiritual manifestation so much as it is a dimensional manifestation.
Okay. You brought this up, so let me chase this for just a moment. You said that there's a difference between ghost hunters and paranormal investigators. What's the difference?
Well, to me, a ghost hunter, by definition, by the name, already concedes or believes in the existence of ghosts. They go to a location with the belief in mind that there is paranormal activity and they hope to document evidence of it. A paranormal investigator is a skeptic, not a cynic, but a skeptic. They go in first and foremost with the idea in mind that there is no paranormal activity occurring. They do their best to debunk it through conventional means or scientific means, and if they are unable to debunk it through logical conclusion, then whatever they're left with, falls into the realm of paranormal, which is anything that's just not considered normal. So a ghost hunter believes in ghosts, goes out with the purpose of collecting evidence to prove their claims of ghost activity. A paranormal investigator goes out to debunk paranormal activity, and if they cannot do that, then they collect data to provide references or proof towards the fact that possibly paranormal activity does exist. So one is a collector of evidence for proof. One is a collector of data for research.
Well, you're approaching what you've just described is an approach to paranormal investigation that is very much like a police investigation. The police go out when there's been a crime or when one has been reported. They go out and scoop up as big a basket of evidence as they can. And then they start sifting it and debunking it, if you will. They start eliminating evidence that doesn't fit. And then whatever they're left with in the basket has to be the truth. And
right. it's
you don't know, till you get to the bottom of the basket, you don't know who the real suspect is.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's no different than a crime scene for a police investigator. You're looking for evidence to back up the claims of the clients or the owners or whatever. And the bottom line is you're trying to get to the bottom of something that hundreds, even thousands of people have been trying to get to the bottom of for thousands of years. It's only that recently, in the last, say, 20, 25 years, the paranormal field has exploded, and partially because of television shows and a lot of books, and I think part of it has to do with kind of a spiritual awakening in the world in general. People are not necessarily becoming religious or spiritually minded in the terms of a creator, but they're becoming spiritually or metaphysically minded in terms of beginning to question, is there all, you know, is this all that there is to me? Is there more to me after this life? What is the purpose of me being here? How can all of these things happen coincidentally? You know, that it just, two and two does not add up to four in this case. And people are seeing that two and two equals five, and they want to understand the math behind it. So they're getting more into this field. They're going to these conventions. They're listening to these paranormal researchers and celebrities who are talking to them about their experiences, and they're eager for answers. They're looking to the people in this field as being the experts, when in fact there really is no expert. But they're coming to these people and saying, "We want, you know, we want more information. We want to know what is, not only what is your opinion, but how do you back that up?" Well, a ghost hunter is just going to provide pictures, audio evidence, which, like I said, there's thousands of pieces of evidence out there.
What would a paranormal investigator provide?
Well, that's going to be the harder part. The paranormal investigator, there again, is still going to be stuck using a lot of the same equipment. But from a scientific aspect, the paranormal investigator is not only going to look at this from, as I said, quantum science, but also from a maybe even a physiological aspect, like we talked about earlier, neurobiological response. The idea that a person can actually create paranormal activity through observation or through sheer belief, through, you know, the ability of the mind to manifest things neurobiologically and actually create something that not only they can see or hear, but that other people around it can see or hear at the same time.
Okay, now let me ask you a question about that. And just so everybody is on the same sheet of music here, let me tell people what you and I were talking about. What we were talking about on the telephone today was the idea that, this is a theory that's out there, that most of the paranormal activity that people see is really being generated from within their own mind. Now, that doesn't mean that they are, quote, just seeing things, because sometimes you have a group of people together and they all see it. But the theory would be that within the mind of someone in that group, there are processes going on that are generating that. And so it has a neurobiological origin. And I've had one of the best known paranormal writers, authors, on this show. And he said that was the conclusion that he had come to after many, many years, many decades of being involved in paranormal research and investigation. That was the conclusion he had come to about poltergeists, that they are generated from within the mind of one of the people there, and that they are very real, and that they do things, they throw things, they toss people across the room. But it's his opinion that it's being generated from the mental energy of someone that's there. Now, here's the question. Let's assume that theory is true. Let's assume that the paranormal activity is being generated in the mind or from the mind of someone present. What about these night cameras that get set up and people go away and then you see things move during the nighttime and there's nobody there, but the camera captures things moving?
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing about this. There's actually, strangely enough, there's kind of a connection with what you're saying with quantum science. There's actually a theory in quantum science bases everything on observation. And what it says is that nothing exists until it is observed. This one is probably one of the hardest ones for me to grasp, but basically everything exists in a cosmic state, and that based on its wavelength or amplitude, it manifests or it is visually or audibly seen or heard as whatever it is. I.e., you know, it does not take on an identity or a uniqueness or individuality until it's observed. This kind of ties into the idea here of, are these people actually manifesting this activity through psychokinetics, some type of PSI? The interesting thing about cameras is that there have been experiments also done with this in terms of light and protons and that sort of thing. And what they found was that when they fired these beams of light through these slits, that they would get one type of pattern. When they went back and did the same thing, but they set up cameras to observe it, the camera would observe something entirely different. And the idea being that, is there a difference between what a human being observes and what a camera sees? You know, how, if it's the same, basically the same experiment, the only difference being human observers versus the cameras, what is the difference there? Why is there a different light pattern being displayed in what the camera sees versus what a person observes? You know, does it come down to the fact that the camera truly sees what is actually happening, whereas the person sees different patterns based on how their brain interprets what's going on, you know, how their brain interprets or observes the activity versus what the camera observes?
Okay, now if it's what you just described, if it is that the camera is actually recording what's actually happening, and what people are observing is different from that, and that's based on, we'll just say, presuppositions in their own brain. If that's the case, then the entire world of physics and all the so-called laws of physics are suspect, because those are all based on observations.
Isn't that a wonderful thing? Basically, one theory can take conventional physics as we know it and throw the entire thing out the window. Mm-hmm. And I've always said that physics, Newtonian physics, is basically the best attempt man has made at this point at explaining the works of God. Quantum science, I heard a physicist actually call quantum science the man's scientific attempt to explain the blueprint of God. How, you know, how do things exist? How do things exist at the molecular level, which everything exists at the molecular level, though we don't think about it that way. Is it, in fact, totally different in the observation of a human being versus, say, you know, an inanimate object, which is designed to capture this, the camera? The camera sees, in effect, the camera sees exactly what is going on.
We have to step away for break, Joey, but we'll pick up right there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, more with Joey Ward right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Joey Ward, the director of West Georgia Paranormal Research Society, and we are talking about the scientific side of paranormal investigation. Joey, we were talking as the break took over. We were talking about the idea that if a camera is recording what's really happening, and what we observe is not the same thing as what the camera sees, if that's the case, then the whole world of physics and the laws of physics is suspect, because it's all based on observation.
Right, exactly. The whole idea is that the theory itself, and then of course the experiments that they've done after the fact with electrons, basically demonstrated to them that the greater the level of observation, the less interference, the more likely that you would get a change in the dispersal pattern or the interpreted pattern versus what, say, a person would see. You know, logic says what I look at in the experiment happening and what the camera sees should be the same, but it's not. Therefore, is the camera making the correct observation, or is the human? And basically what it comes down to is the old saying, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, may be much more literal than we realize. In fact, everything that we see and everything that we take as scientific fact and law may be strictly based on our interpretation of observation, which may in fact not be the actual truth.
Well, a camera is not observing. Observation,
right.
Observation requires consciousness. So a camera is not observing in the strictest sense of the word. It's measuring, and it's simply
right.
recording its measurements.
Yeah, it has no bias. It has no presupposition or anything. It's, like you said, it's strictly observing what is occurring in front of it. A person is going to have a bias or that presupposition or expectations, and obviously in some matters, you know, that's very relevant to decisions we make and things like that, but it's something that we never really thought had as much to do with the actual manifestation of things as we're beginning to realize. And of course, obviously in the field of paranormal research, the old adage, I have to see it to believe it. Well, there's an adage in the paranormal community that says, I have to believe it to see it. And I think when they came out with that saying, they didn't realize just how true that may very well be.
Well, you know, I've had quite a number of eminent scientists, physicists on the show. And so this is not, of course, the first time that I've heard the theory that something doesn't actually exist until it's observed. The problem with that is it does. In reality, we can set a camera in a room, walk out of the room, there's no one observing it, and the camera still, it's measuring light waves and recording those measurements, and it sees what's there. And what's there is still there when no one's observing it.
Yeah, I think that you can kind of look at observation as two things, observation in the eye of the person. Obviously, if I don't see another person, to me, in a sense, they don't exist. I mean, obviously they do, but they don't. The camera, like you said, it's observing everything literally. But when you think about cameras, are not cameras, in fact, designed along the lines of human technology? They're designed along the lines of the human eye, or, you know, to process things along the lines of the human brain, just at a much more technical and calculating level.
Well, they're not conscious, so they're not observing.
Right. It's just strictly documenting what it's seeing.
Yeah.
The observation is in the human person.
But see, all of the instruments they use in those experiments fall into that same category. They're all invented by humans.
Right.
And that's why I don't buy the theory that something doesn't exist unless it's observed. I think observation of something can change things about its existence. I think that's pretty well documented. But the fact that it doesn't exist unless observed, I think we could pretty well, with the camera experiment that I was just talking about, you could pretty well say, yeah, it's still there when no one's observing, when it's just being measured. Now, there is a theory that says it doesn't exist till it's measured. And when we make a measurement of it, that's when it comes into existence. Now, that one I could not argue the camera experiment. I couldn't argue that successfully because it is measuring. So,
well, I think, yeah, the observation idea is it's kind of vague or ambiguous. Obviously, you know, if you go back to the old adage, if a tree falls in the woods, well, granted, no one may be there to see it, but if someone walks through the woods later and it's laying on the ground, you know, it fell. So
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily observation at the point that it occurred. And I agree with you. You know, obviously things do not sit out there in cosmic limbo until someone actually takes a look at it. I think more so what they should mean by that is that observation is unique to each person, and the way I see something, the way you see something, or other people may be different.
Well, I think that's exactly true. You know, the color I see whenever I talk about the color red, it may not be anything at all like what you see when you see something you call red.
Right.
What you see may be what I call green. You know, I mean, but you've learned that when that lights up and when you see that color, that's red to you. But yeah, I think our observations are individual. However, there can be a convergence. Not a convergence, a consensus of observers. So that there are certain things about a situation that all the observers noticed, or that most of the observers noticed, and they describe it similarly. And so you have a consensus of observance. And I think that's kind of, you know, really where science is. Science is more of a consensus than it is an absolute fact. And but now, having said that, you said something earlier about that we're talking about dimensionalism. Okay. You said that there are... These are my words. I can't remember exactly how you said it. You correct me here where I get off track. But sort of realms of reality that are there, that do exist, that perhaps we do not see normally. And so, therefore, people say, well, okay, they don't exist. Or if occasionally we do see them, we say that's paranormal. Okay, I think that's exactly true. I think, and we have ultraviolet light and infrared light as an example. They exist. We know they exist. We can build instruments that can see them, but our eyes can't see them. If this is true, everything in the universe is energy. So if this is true of these two forms of energy, how many other forms of energy are there that we cannot see?
Right. It's like you said, that the human being is severely limited in the range of the visual range, the auditory range, things like that. I mean, we know that simply because animals have a much higher level of visual acuity and audible acuity. What quantum science says with the M theory is that we live in a multiverse, that there are layers upon layers of other universes or dimensions, and some people go off into parallel universes. Not, I don't feed into that part of it, but that these other multiverses exist, and obviously within these, since we are not able to normally see or hear them, then logic says that the laws of physics that we know them here would not apply there. So a transition by someone passing away here to one of those dimensions would, of course, be necessary, because the human carbon-based body would not be able to exist in these other dimensions where physics work differently than they do here. The cosmic makeup, or the cosmic software program, if you will, that dictates this policy and separates things, occasionally is manipulated or affected in localized areas by environmental variables, perhaps on this side or perhaps on that side. And it allows these dimensional convergences, what a lot of paranormal investigators may call a vortex or a portal or something like that, or it may just be a one-time occurrence. But what occurs is in these convergences is that there is a brief intersection or a convergence between this dimension and one of these others. And the things we detect, such as EMF spikes and cold spots, things that we say, okay, I'm getting a cold spot when it should not be a cold spot, or I'm getting an EMF spike when there are no electrical devices or anything around that should be generating this field. Is it possible that this activity is being generated because of the potential convergence? So rather than saying an EMF spike that's warranted or a cold spot that's warranted, it's evidence that there is a spirit attempting to manifest I turn it around and I say that it is not a spirit attempting to manifest, but that it is a direct result of this convergence, because coal spots and EMF spikes occur unnaturally, and there may not be any paranormal activity at all. So, in fact, you can have a convergence occur where there is no communication or recognition from this dimension and the other.
So it would be like a cold front and a warm front hitting each other, but not necessarily causing a thunderstorm.
Exactly. A door opens briefly and closes without either side actually being aware of it.
Now, sort of along the lines of what we're talking about, there is an example of how limited our understanding of physics is. And this example is very real, and it's something people can look up, and you can check this out, folks. You can find it for yourself. NASA launched years ago something called Pioneer 10 in the 70s. Pioneer 10 is gone from the solar system, and it should be clear sailing now in an area of space where there's nothing to hinder it. No gravitational pulls from this solar system. It should be really zipping along. Now, at its top speed, it was moving at 1,000,000 kilometers per day. That's a lot. It is now moving at 25 centimeters per day. And it's moving 25 centimeters per day backward. The scientists involved have said there are obviously forces we are unaware of out there. There is a physics involved that we don't understand and we don't know. Now, that's about a very physical thing. It's a spacecraft, and it's a very physical thing. But that's a good example right there. If we don't understand the physics involved with that spacecraft's flight, how could anybody assume that we have all the answers about the physics involved in these other dimensions and paranormal? And the reason I bring that up is because there are people who, as you use the scientific side to be for investigating paranormal, there are people that use the scientific side to completely debunk it. We'll talk about that when we come back, right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Joey Ward. He is very active in paranormal investigation and is the director of West Georgia Paranormal Research Society. He takes a more scientific slant on paranormal investigation, and that's what we're talking about. Now, Joey, when we went away for break, I was saying, as you use the theories of science to do paranormal investigation, there are people that use theories of science to totally diss paranormal investigation. And I don't think it's justified, really, from a scientific point of view, because I just gave an example of where science has met something that they admit doesn't fit anything they understand about physics, and yet it's happening.
Right. Well, it's like you just said, if you know, we've developed these laws of physics that we assume apply to everything in the universe, with the exception of, say, dark matter. Well, if these laws that we think are logical and that are, you know, the end-all, be-all, if they don't exist beyond the borders of our own solar system, then what's out there? What's wrong with the laws that we have? And what did Pioneer 10 run into? What did it bounce off of, or what stopped it and nudged it backwards? You know, there's a lot of theory that you know, it could be something along the lines of dark matter. The majority of the mass of the universe is thought to be dark matter, because when they did calculations and formulas to try to come up with an idea of the weight or the mass of the universe, they came up significantly short. And in the absence of another idea, they came up with the idea of dark matter, something that we can't see, actually making up the bulk of the mass of the universe. Well, does dark matter conform to the law of physics as we know it? And so that one of the theories I think that NASA and other scientists had is that perhaps dark matter actually had some type of effect on the satellite to actually stop its forward, you know, motion and send it backwards, where now it's probably free-floating backwards on, you know, inertia. But there again, if laws of physics that we thought at least explain the way things work in our universe, if they don't outside of our own solar system, or perhaps maybe they don't even apply within our solar system. So who's to say that things like this don't in fact mean that the laws of gravity, as we know it, need to be rewritten? Well, if the laws of gravity need to be rewritten, then perhaps the majority of physics, or physics as a whole, has a lot of holes in it. It's not, you know, it's not complete, it's not correct at all.
Well, and I think that's the case. You know, I've said a number of times here on this show that I don't buy the idea that there are laws of physics. Those are just the things we're calling laws of physics are just descriptions of our current understanding. And that's subject to change. As we well know, look how much it's changed since the days of Newton. And,
right.
You know, some smart guy is going to come along and step right over some of these laws of physics, and we'll have a whole new set of, quote, laws of physics.
And I think, number one, like you said, that's going to have to happen, because there's just too many anomalies, as the scientists like to call it, anomalies that are disputing physics as we know it. And for us to be able to advance beyond a certain point, I mean, obviously technologically and medically and otherwise, we're advancing at a rapid pace. But at some point, I think we're going to hit a wall. And it's because we're going to be bound within the limitations of our own laws, our own observations or beliefs of what is.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we ever want to look at things like legitimate space travel or technology, you know, light years beyond where we are now, or say even 100 or 500 years from now, we're going to have to go back and rewrite physics, not just at the molecular level through quantum science, but at the bigger level, the things that we think are how things work, how centrifugal force holds things in place, how gravity holds people on the planet, you know, how gravity affects objects passing by, how gravity should affect the Pioneer 10, and how it should not be affecting it now, since it's out in a part of space where there are no large bodies or anything that could exert a gravitational pull on it to slow it down or change direction, and yet something's occurred and basically stopped it in its tracks, and it's just kind of like throwing a ball up against a wall or something, and it stops, and then it just kind of starts recoiling backwards based off the force of the impact, the inertia, is just, you know, sending it backwards. So if physics can't explain that, and yet it just occurred, and, you know, there's no doubt that it occurred, well, then something is wrong with physics.
Well, that's true. Now, let's go back to, for those who may have not heard my previous diatribes on this, let me just summarize it this way, and then we'll get back to a situation that involves, I'll use the term, ghosts. All right, here it is. Anything for which there is no scientific explanation is said to be paranormal. That's the definition of paranormal, something for which there is no scientific explanation. Therefore, the Pioneer 10 and its current situation is paranormal by that definition.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So many people, when they hear the word paranormal in this day and time, they automatically associate it with ghosts or say, Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or cryptozoological beast or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's literally anything that falls outside of what man considers normal or scientifically plausible. So,
that's a very big chunk of the universe.
I mean, you know, 500 years ago, physics as we know it now would have been considered paranormal.
Heresy, as a matter of fact.
The world was flat. Yeah, the people who came out and theorized that the world was round, that was just totally paranormal or supernatural. And in that day, it was heretical. You know, it was something that would get you burned at the stake because the man's interpretation of things was literal. The world is flat, you know, and that's the way it is. That's the way God made it, and anyone who came out and spoke against it otherwise was disputing the word of God or man's interpretation. And it goes back to the same thing. It's always man's interpretation of events or what things are. We interpret things as they are through the laws of physics that we have. But what if our interpretation is totally, totally wrong? It's the best we have, but yet it is still literally just a drop in the ocean. We look at ourselves now and say we're technologically advanced. We've moved down the trail by leaps and bounds over where we were, say, 500 years ago, 100 years, 1,000 years ago, when man was first creating telescopes. But in all honesty, are we really on a scale at this point that's barely even moved from where we were 1,000 years ago in terms of where technology and where science may actually eventually end up?
Well, when we think we're technologically advanced, the next question ought to be, as compared to what? We're technologically advanced as compared to where we were 100 years ago. But let's compare us to the possible other civilizations in the universe. And I think we're probably primitives
as compared to them. Right, we're
cavemen. Yeah. All right, now... Well, we have a break coming up. Let me tell you what I want us to talk about when we come back from this break. I want to go back to ghosts for a minute. And the situation is, you've got someone driving down a road, a person who absolutely does not believe in the paranormal at all, thinks it's all bunk. This person sees a woman on the side of the road out in the middle of nowhere, stops and says, "Do you need a ride?" She says, "Yes." She gets in the back seat. And when they get to the destination, he turns around and she's not there. He doesn't have any neurobiological stuff happening because he's totally opposed to that idea that such things can happen. And so he has no expectation that there are ghosts, no expectation that there are spirits. And then this person disappears right out of the back seat. There are a lot of stories like that around. And whenever we come back from break, I want us to address how your theory of paranormal investigation fits that. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, a very special welcome. We're sorry about you missing the first hour, and I truly sympathize with you over the lost information, but we're glad you're here now, and we're talking with Joey Ward, and he is the director of West Georgia Paranormal Research Society, and we're talking about approaching paranormal investigation with a bit of a more of a scientific eye than is generally done. And Joey, before we went to break, I set up a situation. And the situation is, guy is driving down a road in a very remote area. There are no houses around or anything like that. He sees a lady standing on the side of the road, and he stops. It's nighttime. He stops, and he says, do you need a lift? And she says, yes. And she tells him, take me to this next house up here or whatever. So she gets in the back seat, and he drives down the road, and they carry on a conversation. And when he gets to the house and stops, he turns around, and she's gone. Now, this guy is someone who absolutely has no belief or sympathy for the paranormal. And so it's a little difficult to think that he's got some kind of neuroprocesses going on that are causing that and manifesting that. How would you explain that?
Well, that's kind of an interesting situation, and the problem with those type of occurrences is that they don't really fit the scientific explanation as well as they do the conventional aspect. Those types of occurrences fit nicely with what the conventional paranormal investigator, you know, believes in, as far as that type of occurrence is a spirit manifestation, that he did in fact pick up a ghost, and you know, that they disappeared at some point. What I found with these types of cases is, first and foremost, you have to weed out the ones that are strictly urban legends, that are stories that were passed down, and then you're left with the ones, like you said, that were from credible witnesses, people who you know, law enforcement or military, or people who are very reliable, very honest, legitimate people who have these types of occurrences. The closest theory that I could come up with in terms of those, like you said, obviously there should not be any type of neurobiological process going on, because these people are predisposed to the opposite. In fact, they have no belief in ghosts, or in fact scoff at people who, you know, who do this kind of work, and yet they have an occurrence that is in fact paranormal. So from a neurobiological standpoint, there should not be anything going on. The only thing that I could think of, and this is a far stretch, if you look at this from the quantum science aspect, you know, we look at the different universes, the different things. Now, again, I'm going back to how man determines what we think we can and can't do. If these universes exist, logic tells us we can't exist in those, because the limitations of the human body would not allow it. Perhaps in this universe there is no air. There is no gravity, you know, radiation, something of a different cosmic type exists in that universe that the human carbon-based body would not be able to sustain to die. But if life or type of entity exists in this other dimension, and maybe they're not bound to a human form, human body, in other words, the door may work more efficiently one way. We may not be able to enter that dimension and live, you know, survive, but they may in fact be able to enter ours. And I liken it to the idea that it's not as if you pass away and you ascend to this dimension and you all of a sudden look around and say, hey, I'm now a higher being. It could very well be that as a part of this ascension or this other dimensional existence, you're not aware of these things. As far as you know, you still exist as you did. But from an ethereal standpoint or a corporeal standpoint, you may not. Physics don't apply the same way there, which may allow you to return to this dimension for brief periods of time until those doors are closed. Whereas we would not be able to exist there. So it's possible that perhaps the door opened one way for travel. We cannot travel there, but perhaps they can travel here. And from a say from a mental standpoint or a memory standpoint, things that still exist and still function to them in much the same way as they did when they lived and existed here. So it's just a continuation of normal process. And they're not aware of the travel. They're not aware of the differences. It's just a continuation of what they were and what they think they always have been. And that's kind of a far stretch, but I think realistically, you have to go one of two ways with it. You either have to say, well, that supports more along the lines of the conventional paranormal aspect, or else you have to kind of stretch it a little bit and say that from a quantum science aspect, the only way that you could explain this is that there is a possibility that entities existing in this other dimension are not as limited as we are to dimensional crossings by physics. They are able to cross over here, whereas we are not able to cross over there.
All right. What about EVPs? What are they? If it's not the voices of disembodied spirits, as we get told by many paranormal investigators.
Well, there again, it's one of two things. If those dimensions exist, and if these cases actually occur where these doors open and these people perhaps are able to cross over, if that connection is there, then sound can travel between the two. The other explanation goes back to what we were talking about earlier. How much of this is the presupposition of the person? If people, if we theorize that poltergeist activity and things like that are actually psychokinetic, that the person experiencing it is actually the source of the problem, they are causing it. Is it possible that they are actually using these voices and things as well? So it's either possibly a neurobiological or a psychokinetic response by the person being affected, or it, from a quantum science aspect, it's possible that it is a legitimate audible response through one of these doorways. So it could be very tangibly real from a dimensional aspect, or it could be a psychological, psychokinetic, or neurobiological from the human aspect. So, you know, two in one hand, one in the other.
Well, I would think it would be... I think an experiment could be done rather easily to rule out or rule in one way or the other whether it's neurobiological, because without doing the experiment that I'm going to describe, the only way that we have of knowing that the sounds that show up in these recordings were not audible to the people present is to have people present, which then introduces the possibility of neurobiological origin.
Right.
But if you put the recorder in a room that is both soundproof and completely radio frequency dead and walk away from it, come back later and there's voices on it, then we could say, all right, it's not neurobiological.
Right.
But that still wouldn't tell us, would it? It still wouldn't tell us whether those are disembodied spirits or whether that is those are voices from another dimension.
Right. Like you said, if you have a control setting, like say a Faraday box, something similar to that, or literally you put a recorder in a room, all the people leave, it's devoid of radio activity or any types of radio transmissions or anything else that it might pick up, and yet it records a voice, it has to be more dimensional. The recorder is going to pick up what occurs, whether you know people are there or not. It gets back to what the camera sees versus what the person sees. If it occurs, the recorder is going to pick it up. And there again with EVPs, you've got the difference between what we call an EVP, which is an electronic voice phenomenon, and an AVP, which is an audible.
Yeah.
Where the investigator actually literally hears the voice. They hear the activity with their own ears.
Mm-hmm.
99% of the time, audible activity is EVP. People are asking questions, they're holding recorders, they're doing things, and they never hear anything. They go back later and play the tape back, and there's an answer to their question. 99% of them, like I said, are EVP. Now, is it possible that since those are being recorded by a recorder that's being held by a person or that's in a room where people are at, how many of those could be occurring because of the manipulation of someone in the room? The ones that occur when no one is there, when the recorder is alone, could be dimensional. So you always seem to come back to the same two things. From a science, from a quantum aspect, it could all be, for the most part, dimensional occurrence. From a physiological or from a physical aspect, how much of it could be neurobiological? Well, if you remove the person from the equation, it takes that out of it, like you said. It has to be something dimensional.
No, I don't think so. If you take the person out of it, and the voice occurs, then you can say it's not neurobiological. But the question would still be, is that a disembodied spirit, or are we talking about some convergence of dimension?
Right. Well, to me, if you cater to the quantum science aspect, then there is no such thing as a entity in the typical paranormal sense. There is no.
Oh, I see what you're saying. When a person dies physically, you're saying their spirit or soul or consciousness or whatever moves to another dimension.
Right, the essence of who they are, what they are. So they still exist, and I guess you could quantify them as an entity, but there is no literal what you would call a spiritual manifestation. That's just kind of a term that we've placed on things. I mean, we coined the word ghost just like anything else to describe what we call dead people. If a dead person comes back, they're a ghost. Well, what is death? I mean, literally, death is the body ceasing to function. But if the essence remains and ascends dimensionally and returns through these doorways or communicates audibly or whatever through these doorways, then they are an entity, in effect, because they exist, they have some uniqueness or individuality, but they're not really a spiritual entity in the sense that they are a spirit. There again, that's just another word that we've used to coin.
Okay, so what you're saying is they're not here.
Right.
In other words, we don't have ghosts and spirits wandering around here.
No. No, if the quantum science idea is plausible to this, then there are not literally, spirits or ghosts walking around us. Maybe even as we sit here now in this room or where you're sitting, there's not necessarily literally ghosts walking around waiting for that moment to manifest and speak to someone or give some sign of their presence. That it is more of a dimensional convergence, and some places are more predisposed to activity because of external influences. There are places that are known to be haunted. Well, there's probably something at that location that predisposes the location to be more active or for doorways to open because of influences geographically there on this side of the door or occurrences occurring geographically on the other side of the door.
All right. I want to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to join in this discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, this is October. It's the month we most think about ghosts because, at least here in the United States, because we have this big holiday called Halloween, and that's coming up this month. It is the month we think about ghosts and spirits and spooky things. And we have a paranormal investigator here who says, well, it's not ghosts and spooky things. It's just people's energy, their consciousness, the essence of who they are, and they're in another dimension. And sometimes that dimension gets into our dimension. Oh, I love sinus trouble.
Oh, yeah, it's that time of year.
Yeah, a little coffee helps. Okay, so sometimes their dimension gets over into our dimension, and we observe them in some way. We observe EVPs. We observe maybe things moving when they shouldn't be moving according to the norm. And let me ask you this. Now, would you say, Joey, would you say that what you're talking about is speculative? Or would you say...
It's totally speculative at this point. I mean, and like I tell people, my opinion and a quarter won't get you a cup of coffee.
I'll tell you what it will do. It will get you a membership at the Kevin Smith Show.
A quarter?
23 cents a day.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Right. Can't beat it.
Well, now that's worth more than a cup of coffee any day.
That's true. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number here in the studio. We have a toll-free number for the USA and Canada. It is 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for out there, but I do have flash messages. So what you do is go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down. You'll see the graphic about tonight's show. You'll see Joey's picture. Over on the right side of that, you'll see a link that says flash message. You can send me your question or your comment, and I'll read it on the air, so long as you are not in the USA and you're not in Canada. If you're in the USA or Canada, I have telephones for you, and I'll even pay for the call. Folks, a lot of you have had instances where you have seen what you think is a ghost. And Joey has given his explanation for what he thinks that is. On the other hand, he said, that's speculative. But we'd like to hear from you about ghosts. We'd like to hear from you what you think about ghosts and what you think about approaching this scientifically as Joey's talking about. Maybe you're for it. Maybe you think he's on the right track. Maybe you think he's not. If you think he's not, we'd like to hear why. That's what talk shows are all about, or should be all about, and that is the free flow of information. 623-444-5889. All right, now, Joey, what about, we see a lot of photographs and video now that show orbs, little balls of light, some of them almost, I think you would say, transparent, because you can see right through them. How do you account for those with your theory?
Well, orbs are probably one of the most controversial things in the paranormal field. You have people who are firm believers that orbs are manifestations of a spirit or spirit activity, and you have other people who are totally opposed to that. Now, I'm obviously, through research and through other groups' research, it's been found that 99% of the time, the orbs are just particulate matter, dust or moisture, or a small bug or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are those 1% that you can't rule out for those reasons. And typically, orbs that are considered to be possibly paranormal are orbs that are not bugs, but yet seem to exhibit an intelligence or seem to exhibit their own light. They emanate their own light source. They're not dependent on light from the camera or the flash of the camera. Intelligence and a self-sustaining light source would fall into that. Now, within that 1%, you have to weed out things like natural balls of energy that occur that scientists, we're all aware that balls of energy do occur in certain circumstances. Swamp gases, there's a lot of different things that can actually manifest orbs or some types of mist or whatever that seem to have their own source of light. So when you narrow it down to 1% of credible orbs and then take that 1% and narrow down the credible orbs that could actually be explained environmentally or naturally through things like energy orbs or swamp gas or whatever, you're left with a very small number. And I know for myself, in 10 years, I think I've only seen one or two orbs on video. I've seen nothing on camera, you know, digital still shots. I've seen no orbs on digital still shots that I thought were paranormal. I have seen one or two on video that, like I said, seemed to exhibit an intelligence that was not, say, a bug or something like that, that did seem to generate their own light source because they would go out of the light field and come back, and yet the entire time they would continue to, you know, give off their own light source, even when they were in darkness. One or two in 10 years, and I've seen thousands and thousands of orbs.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. How many pandas does it take to prove there are pandas?
Just one.
Yeah. So if you've seen one, that's enough. It doesn't, you know, if 99.99999999% prove to be something else, but there's that one instance where it cannot be explained, that's the one panda.
And see, that goes back to that that mentality in the scientific field, and I think, you know, even people like myself are guilty of it sometimes. We like to step outside the boundaries of science on a lot of things, and yet we turn around and fall back to science for other things that we either don't like to try to theorize or we don't have a theory for, so we fall back to science and say, well, you know, this is what we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Orbs are very, very common, and anyone who does this for any length of time is you're gonna have occurrences, even people who don't, just people taking random pictures of parties or get-togethers or just taking a picture on any given day of the week or night, sooner or later are going to get an orb. And it gets the mind racing, and, you know, the thoughts flow in, and most of the time it's nothing, and they're either disappointed or they're relieved, in fact, sometimes, because it's not, you know, a spirit, it's not something paranormal, there's not something in your house because you've got a picture of an orb, there's not a ghost there. So it comes down to the person as to, you know, whether they want the orb to be paranormal or not. It's just that, you know, that one panda here or there does exist, and there have been a few, and like I said, they do seem to exhibit their own intelligence. They do seem to give off their own life.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Joey Ward, and we're talking about ghosts, spirits, or whatever it is that's causing the things we call ghosts and spirits. And I had mentioned orbs. And we discussed the fact that you've only seen one in all the years that you've been doing paranormal investigation. You've only seen one that fit the truly paranormal definition. But that one, what is it?
Right. It's like you said, it's that panda.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to the whole idea of stepping outside of science, just like, you know, quantum science tries to do with everything else. You know, what is it? You determine that it's paranormal. You determine that it's not particular. It's not a bug or whatever. That it does seem to have intelligence or motivation or something. But you've only got one. So, you know, you really, with one, it's almost like there's a lack of material to work with. You know, what do you theorize that it is? It doesn't occur on a regular enough scale. You can't really compile a lot of data to try to determine what it is, or even theorize beyond just pure speculation. Now, you know, there again, I go back to the dimensional thing. Is it possible that this orb is again something or someone or whatever that has transcended from this other dimension across this doorway into ours, and yet rather than manifesting or existing in, say, a corporeal sense, something that we recognize as a human being, that it manifests more of the form that it may actually exist in that dimension. You know, for all we know, if this dimension exists, and if any of what I'm speculating is true, could it be that in their purest form, these entities or essences in this other dimension are actually existing more in the form of an orb rather than what we consider, you know, a human body? It's almost like an orb could be a random glitch or a random phenomenon of these entities crossing over for these brief periods. It could literally be a person or an entity, but rather than existing in a form that we relate to a human being, it could be existing in more of the form that is natural to it dimensionally.
All right. Is there any correlation between the appearance of orbs and a spike in EMF?
Occasionally, I think the same parameters, you know, can be said for orbs as far as cold spots or EMFs, the same type of parameters in terms of paranormal activity occurring. It's just that if you have, let's say, 1,000 cases where you have cold spots or EMF phenomena, and then you have a paranormal occurrence, someone sees something or hears something, for every 1,000 of those, or even 10,000 of those, you may only have one orb occurrence that falls within the same parameters that you're not able to debunk as environmental. So you've got, you know, perhaps 10,000 occurrences that we deem as human-based or human-seen or human-heard, as opposed to one in 10,000 that falls within the same criteria but exhibits as an orb.
All right, I'm going to throw a theory at you. You may have thought about this before, and maybe not. In Earth's geology, when you have a fault line, and this fault line is under great pressure, and it gives just a little bit, it sometimes, the motion of rock against rock, crystal against crystal, creates something sometimes they call the piezoelectric effect. So it generates electricity, and sometimes for just an instant it shoots out of the earth this ball of light. This has been observed, it's been filmed, it's pretty well documented real Earth phenomena. Is it possible that you have something similar to that happening, where you have one dimension striking against another, and instead of the doorway opening up, so to speak, there's friction between the dimensions, and maybe that's what's
right,
causing the orbs?
Yeah, so instead of it being an actual manifestation or an entity or whatever crossing over, it's more of a physical effect of the two plates, the tectonics or whatever, the two plates rubbing or coming into some kind of physical contact and creating an environmental variable like an electromagnetic field or, you know, geomagnetic ley lines, things that, like you said, that scientifically we know exist and produce these types of effects. So it could, in fact, be that an orb is not an intelligent presence, but it is a physical product some type of interaction between those dimensions.
Yeah, I'm just speculating because, you know, we hear things all the time. You know, we hear people say things like, as below, so above, you know, so forth. Okay, well, maybe that's true. I don't know. But if it is, then, you know, you have this real physical phenomena that takes place here on the planet. And it's something that's been observed, it's been filmed, it's been the forces have been measured, and it's a real phenomena that happens here on the planet. So I'm just speculating that perhaps when we have sort of a collision of dimensions, where it's really not a thinning of the veil, but sort of a collision of the dimensions. Maybe there's some sort of physical effect that takes place as a result of that. And that's why I asked if EMF spikes, because I would think that if it's going to create a physical phenomena that is human observed, for instance, orbs, if that's going to happen, there, and if it's being caused as I've described, then it would have to have some sort of energy spike around it, you would think.
The problem with these types of things, I see what you're saying, that, you know, the theory is sound as far as what could be causing them. The problem with determining that through EMF measurements is that typically, you know, they're either captured by a digital camera or by a video camera, and at the point that we observe the occurrence, it's long since gone. You know, the orb has already dissipated, disappeared. The video is not, you know, maybe not reviewed until the next day. The camera shots are maybe not seen until days later. And, of course, at that point, the orb is gone, and any hope of measuring the area around it for abnormal electromagnetic fields or otherwise are gone. The only way to know for sure would be to actually, you know, be lucky enough to be in a position where one occurred, and to be able to hold a measuring device, you know, close to it as it occurred to measure that. But typically when these things are found, it's, you know, it's hours later or days after the fact, when the orb, of course, is gone and there's no way to go back and measure for it.
All right. Now, the EMF meters that are used by people doing paranormal investigations, is there no way to set one of those up? Set it up remotely like you do a camera, where the camera's set up and it's recording? Is there no way to set up an EMF meter and have it recording its data right alongside the camera?
There are most groups use the you know, the conventional EMF meters, whether it's the Sperry's or the Tri-Fields, which are the handhelds that you can either carry or you can, you know, lay them somewhere strategically. A lot of times groups will put the meter in view of the camera so that when the video camera is recording, it's also recording any activity that occurs on the EMF meter. There are data loggers. There's a lot of those out there now that are actually devices that will measure a lot of different things at one time and save it to a chip or something with inside. It'll measure barometric pressure, humidity, temperature, electromagnetic fields, those types of things. And the way that you could possibly catch that is if, let's say, the data logger was in the room when the orb occurred and it was in close proximity, the data logger should have a timestamp showing you at what time any abnormal spikes occurred. You should be able to go back to the video camera and correlate the timestamp on the video camera to match the timestamp on the data recorder.
Are you aware of anybody having done that?
It's fairly simple to do. I mean, it just takes a little coordination and having all those things in place at the time that one of these orbs occurs. But since they are so random and rare, I don't know of anyone that's actually done it. It like I said, it would be relatively simple to do. I just don't know that when these things do occur, like I said, 1 in 10,000, if anyone has actually done that. I'm sure someone out there probably has had some data recorders and possibly have some evidence to that effect. I just haven't seen anything any reports or papers or, you know, haven't, no information has been passed along to me by anyone who says that they actually were able to correlate an EMF spike or a field of cold or anything abnormal, you know, static electricity or otherwise, through a data logger at the point that an orb occurred, because, you know, you're talking 1 in 10,000, and then out of that, those 1 in 10,000, the majority of those are found by groups who don't have that setup in place, so it's strictly after the fact. You're just going to have that occurrence where maybe this one group happens to have all the equipment in place and an orb occurs and they do get that reading, but at this point I have yet to have anyone show me any evidence or you know, where they've had that occur. It's just a really, really random occurrence. It's like having everything in place when that panda happens to walk into the room, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it certainly would be worth the hunt. I think, I mean, just to be able to verify, if possible, if this is happening as a physical phenomena based on something like I described, or if this is in fact some sort of entity, I think it would be well worth the hunt. Although I'm not a paranormal investigator, and it's always easier for people who don't do a job to be experts about how the job should be done. I used to be a cop, and people all over the world are experts about how to be a cop, and they've never even been a crossing guard, you know, but they're experts on how to be a cop.
Well, it works the same way. It's kind of like you said, if, you know, if cops, there was a movie that came out a few years ago, and I don't remember if you saw it. I think Tom Cruise was in it, and it was in the future, and they were actually able to see into the future and look at people and tell whether or not they were going to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it was someone who was going to commit murder or whatever, then, of course, they could get to them and stop it before it occurred. And this is kind of the same thing. You know, if cops could do that and be at the scene of a crime and stop it before it happened, or in some ways observe it happen, you know, it would definitely give them a jump up on things. The same thing with these. If paranormal investigators were in a position to observe these orbs as they happen with the proper equipment and with the data logging in place, and they were able to come back and say, you know what, there was an orb, yeah, it didn't fall within the environmental variables, we were able to document.
Hate to do it, Joey, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Fighting sinus problems this evening, but we're going to get there. And we're talking with Joey Ward. Joey is the director of the West Georgia Paranormal Research Society. Joey, I suspect that there are a lot of folks who hear what you've got to say and think, well, this guy doesn't even think there's anything that is paranormal. So in all the years that you've been doing paranormal investigation, have you concluded ever that paranormal activity was indeed involved?
Well, oh, definitely. Yeah. And let me say this, up until about 2 years ago, I followed the party line like everybody else. I catered to the conventional logic and the conventional theory of what paranormal activity was, how it manifested, how the equipment recorded paranormal activity. Quantum science was kind of an after effect for me when I began to try to think outside the box and say, you know, I'm not satisfied with this. We're not getting anywhere. We've got to get the scientific community on board with this, and we've got to understand that while our motivation is right, our logic perhaps is not. So we've got to think in other directions. We've got to get to the next fork in the road, and instead of turning left like we always do, maybe we need to turn right this time. And quantum science fell into place for me because it allows me as a logical thinker to put a face to paranormal activity without discounting it. It's still paranormal. It's just not paranormal in the conventional sense that we've all grown up believing ghosts to be, and what the movies and the books show us, what we've always been taught. It is paranormal in the sense that it's not normal, but that there is an explanation for what it is, and if we can build on this explanation and someday prove it plausible, then the next step beyond that would be to, of course, measure it, research it, and perhaps at some point even find a way to establish communication.
Thomas Edison was working on, and some people say he successfully invented, a device for speaking to, quote, the other side and communicating with the other side. What do you know about that?
I had read something about that, and like you said, some people speculated that it was still a work in progress when he died. Other people said that no, he had in fact finished it and tested it, and that it did work. I would be curious to see. I've never actually seen the apparatus or how it worked, what it was based off of, because obviously the technology in his day, electricity was a very new thing. It was a rapidly growing thing. But people like Edison and Tesla were experimenting with electrical fields and electricity and electromagnetic fields. And who knows what, perhaps Edison stumbled across. I mean, in the present day, we equate abnormal EMF fields with paranormal activity. Is it possible that he had developed something along those lines that rather than recording electromagnetic fields was actually, in fact, generating artificial fields to use as a form of communication? We use radio waves to send transmissions. Is it possible that he had developed some type of an electrical field or an electromagnetic field tuned to a certain frequency that allowed for communication much the same way we use FM and AM?
So you wouldn't discount the idea?
If the dimensional theory is found, if these doorways exist, things can come through and these doorways do open, then it's plausible to believe that at some point if we're able to prove these things, then it stands to reason that we should be able to develop technology to allow us to perhaps either artificially open these doorways or bridge the gap through some type of communication. And more than likely the first form of communication would be the most elemental, which would be some type of a transmission rather than audible rather than visual.
Well, now see, that brings up, we talked about EVPs, and we don't have much time left in the show, but there was a movie called White Noise that had to do with visual sort of EVPs showing up on television screens in the snow and the white noise after a television station goes off the air. What would you think those would be?
Well, I mean, literally that could kind of fall back into that same area. White noise is just basically static interference and things along a certain frequency or wavelength. And televisions would do the same thing, just at a different frequency or level.
Would we be looking into the other dimension then?
I don't know that we would be looking into it, but is it possible that the white noise or the static? Well, it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to fall into the what we call matrixing, where people see things and the mind logically tries to adapt it into something that we recognize. It's either matrixing, or if it is a dimensional connection. Is it possible not that you're necessarily opening a doorway? I don't think that a television or something is capable of doing that, but is it possible that the television during those periods is actually creating are enhancing some form of an artificial bridge. It's not opening a door, but it's enhancing a possibility for an occurrence. I tend to think that things like that in televisions are just fake. I don't think there's a scientific basis for the scratchy screen as being a connection. I think that it's just matrix, and we're seeing things in there, or even in the white noise. I really don't know that white noise is actually a credible phenomenon, but yet there are people who swear up and down that it is. I haven't had any success with white noise, whereas some people, it's a regular staple. It's a regular part of their investigation. They use it on every case, and they swear by it. I just feel like white noise and things like that are even farther out on the limb than the things that I speculate about. And the limb is pretty flimsy to me as it is.
Well, you know, I can appreciate what you're saying, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you have the intellectual honesty and integrity that you recognize that what you're talking about is a theory, and as you said, it's pretty flimsy for yourself. And yet, that's not an indictment against the theory, because we're dealing with the paranormal, and that means that everything about it is theory. Regardless of what side of the fence you come down on, everything about it is theory, except this. People are seeing and experiencing things that are beyond the boundaries of normal explanation. That's not a theory. People are seeing and experiencing things that are beyond the normal boundaries of our experiences. And, I think what you're doing is very valuable in that you're trying to come up with some kind of explanation for these experiences.
And I think when it's all said and done that the paranormal field and occurrences are really not going to fall into one area. I think there's going to be several. One, obviously, is going to be those cases that are psychological, that there is no paranormal occurrence, that it is a psychological. There are also going to be the physiological and the neurobiological that are occurring due to the person.
I wish we had more time, Joey, but the music has taken over and we've hit the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. That's a wrap for this week. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. And maybe we'll take your call. Until next time. So long, everybody.